Hello.
Hello.
Paul's the late one this time.
Are you starting without me? What the hell? Why would you do that?
Hey, Laura showed up.
Hey.
We've still got 3 minutes. Come on.
It's just us. Right? Isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
It is.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Is this going to be the start of the episode?
It is.
Donna. Oh no.
JJ, why you gotta do us like that?
That's right. That's right. That's why
hey,
gotta have control of the
hallway tracks are awkward, right? Get started. They can be really awkward. I don't know. So
you know what else is really awkward?
What?
Buying a car.
Oh God.
I think
yeah, it is.
All three of us have recently bought cars.
I am still in the process of buying a car.
So. Well, okay, you're still but in the yes. process.
Yeah. No. It's
Tell not. Us about that.
The used car market is horrendous right now. Still, I think the prices are slowly starting to come down. But no, trying to find. I have a very specific type of car in mind. It has to tow over 7,000 pounds, so it can tow the fancy car behind it. Which kind of narrows my options a little bit, and we don't want a pickup truck. So basically,
like a Sequoia or something like that, then
Sequoia maybe, but right now I think we're kind of narrowed down to either a Dodge Durango, which I know, or a Audi Q7 with the 3.0 liter V6 that can tow it. So the Audi is like the Porsche Cayenne.
Yep, my mom actually has one of those.
And, oh yeah,
fancy.
It was. I gotta say, it's a zippy little thing. Well, not really little. Yeah. It's actually quite spacious inside. So it's
a big car. Yeah, not as big as my gigantic Highlander. It feels like, but it's bigger. But yeah, it's really heavy, which is the difference to me. It's like. I forget the weight right now, but it's definitely an experience. I can't wait to actually drive one. Trying to find one though is hard. Trying to find the right one, I should say.
There's a Q8, yeah. Right?
Yeah, but that's newer. It came out in 2019, I think, 2020.
Right.
So maybe. I test drove a Q8 at one point, and my only feedback is I'm a relatively tall guy. I mean, yeah. I guess I'm average. And I remember
average in so many ways.
It's so true.
It's so bad.
The windshield felt very close to my face. Like kinda really, like it felt like constricting. If that was why, I think I did not go down that path. But last time we were in the same physical space, Laura, I believe you are not the same size as me. Yeah.
I am considerably shorter. Yes. I am considerably shorter than I think everyone on this call. But also, so the boy is 6'2", 6'1".
Oh, yeah. Yeah. He's going to go driven crazy.
Well, this is a Q7, not the Q8.
True.
So I don't know. We got into it. We're waiting for it to get cleaned. So, of course, this is a used car, which means it's a complete mess at the dealer. We're going to CarMax, and I have to say, I've already bought one car from CarMax. Their warranty is amazing, and I have a really great service department there. So I'm doing it again, trying to see if I can get lightning in a bottle. But it got shipped, and it was like really dirty when it got there, and it's not supposed to be. Our sales guy was really pissed off. He's like, I'm going to go talk to someone. This has to not happen because it's not supposed to, apparently, when you ship from store to store. It's supposed to be clean. So,
I mean, you can anyway, expect a bit of like, dirt from the road, but
well, yeah, no, still but like, relatively these are, there's clean. There's wrappers in the ashtray,
right?
Like candy wrappers in the ashtray, dog hair all over the back. I'm not that picky because I have two dogs that shed a ton, so like I'm like, it's dog hair, but he really wasn't happy.
Yeah,
I guess I mean, you're not buying supposed to do that.
You're buying a car at a expensive used car dealership that's supposed to do you right. I feel like it's fair enough to expect the detail.
I'm not that picky. Maybe I'm just one of those people that's just not picky until it's broken. Right. But yeah, that's the crazy, crazy experience for me with a car, because we actually did get a Durango from there, and like we discovered the oil pan was warped.
Mm.
Like, so that drag of back. I have no idea, but it makes me wonder where this person was driving this car before we got it.
Right.
Mm.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah. But
so they just, you took it back and they gave you money or gave you credit or whatever. Yeah. Nice.
Yeah. CarMax has that like 30-day return policy. Right. Like no questions asked within 30 days, just return it. And you're like, okay, I can return it in 30 days if I don't like it. But of those 30 days, I think it spent 2 weeks in the repair shop while they were trying to figure out why there was oil all over my driveway. And then we realized, oh, that's great. The oil pan is warped. Huh. Not good.
Not good.
Not good. No, no.
Now you would think they would pick that up in an inspection.
I think it's just been so busy. It's been so busy. So like, you got to be a little more careful right now.
Yeah.
I don't know.
But you know, that's a good thing. They've got that 30 days. So if you do, chances are something like that, you will pick up in the first 30 days. So that's not bad.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I mean, hell, it's much, much better than any car buying experience I've had before. So I've had some really, really bad car dealership stories. Yeah. Those are fun. But anybody else like have bad experiences?
I had a roller coaster.
You had a roller coaster experience?
I had a roller coaster. So I was buying a car that I really wanted, which is the new Subaru Outback Wilderness Edition. Mm-hmm. So it is a brand new model as of this month.
Okay.
Free Outback Steakhouse for life too.
Yeah, it does come with free steaks at Outback Steakhouse. All the blooming onions you can fit in the back.
Nice.
And so there's they did a off-road-ish version of it called the Onyx a couple of years ago, but it just wasn't quite there. And this version, they actually put some good all-terrain wheels on it. They lifted it up a bit. They fixed the approach and departure angles.
Nice.
And a few other things that makes it quite capable off-road. I mean, it's still not a super fancy rock crawling Jeep, but it's in the same category as the regular Jeeps as opposed to the super hardcore ones. And it's got a decent it's got the 2.4 liter turbo engine in it, so it's got a lot of pep. So it's almost as fast as the WRX I was trading in, which is nice. The trade-in was really good. They offered me 15 for my old car, which 3 months ago I was offered 10 for. So that tells you how strong the used car market is right now.
Nice.
Everything went really well. It's the fourth car I've bought from this dealership. So
that's a lot of cars from one dealership.
There's a lot of cars from one dealership. They did me pretty well. And then it came to finance time. And I'm like, look, I want the car. I want the roof racks, crossbars. I'm going to pay for them cash separately. I don't want them in the finance deal. I'm not going to pay interest on a set of roof racks. I'm not stupid. And so anything else I'm going to pay cash for other than the car itself.
Right.
And then of course he starts trying to sell me on the, the extended warranty and the coating
one. Oh yeah.
And the tinting, all that stuff. And I'm like, you know what? I don't want any of that. And I don't want to have that discussion while we're talking finance. If you want to sell me on tinting, sell me on tinting and I'll pay cash for it.
Okay.
So we went through and then he's at the, and also I had a deadline. I had to be out of there at a certain time. And so I think he kind of played into that a little bit. So we came to the actual finance details. It was 60 months, pretty low interest rate. And then he's like, and there's also a 63 month you can do with a slightly lower interest rate. And that comes with a couple of things. And I'm like, okay, cool. As long as you're not charging me extra for the extra couple of things and and it works out. And that was the other thing. He was like, the interest rate is offsetting the thing. So is offsetting the extra 3 months. So it's a complete wash. You're paying the same amount. Okay. It's an extra dollar a month.
Okay.
And I'm like, okay, so that's $3 or something over the life of the thing, right? So whatever. Well, actually not $3. $60 or $100, whatever. And so I'm like, cool, let's go for it. And then, of course, I didn't actually look at the changed totals because I wasn't expecting the totals to change. And we'd already kind of gone through that screen. And so when I got home, and because I was, as I said, I was in a rush, and like we were right at the time I had to leave. So I'm like, okay, just sign it all off. And it's all like signed online and everything now on a little tablet. And so I get it home the next day, actually Monday after I did the stuff over the weekend. Because it was the Barbecue University stuff that I did.
Oh, right,
so
I basically
had to get to that, which was why I was in a rush. Looked at it on Monday, and sure enough, they'd added like $3,000 to the top of the price to cover those extras. And I'm like, you motherfuckers. This is exactly what I said I didn't want to do. And also, they had added the roof racks to the finance.
Which you told them not to do.
Which I specifically told them not to do. But I wasn't sure at the time because of the other extra stuff. So I'm like, all right, I'm just going to go in there and talk to them about it. And so I go in there, I'm like, okay, so what's going on? You've added $3,000 extra. You need to tell me like why you've done this, because this is not what we agreed on. I was very clear the whole time that I didn't want to spend extra. And so he starts doing that. Oh, well, you don't get stuff for free. Ha ha ha. You should have seen what you were signing. Ha ha ha. And I'm like, dude, you know what? I was super clear with you. You managed to slip one through me, but at the same time, this is the fourth car report from you, and you all should be looking after me, not like last minute trying to scam me out of a couple hundred dollars commission or whatever it is you're earning off this. And he's like, well, look, this is the Subaru of America deal. So there's nothing I can do about it. And you just have to, you know, don't worry about it though, because it's the same amount. I'm like, dude, okay. You do 60 by this number, 63 by that number. There's $3,000 difference. Tell me how that's the same. And of course he's doing, oh, well, you got to look at the monthly amount, not the whole amount. I'm like, no, I got to look at the whole amount. That's how much I'm paying. And so he's like basically laughing and carrying on and making out, like trying to make me feel a bit silly so that I'll like stop pushing back on it. I'm like, if you're not going to help me, that's fine. I'll just go. So I just went, I got home, I called Subaru of America and I said, this is what happened. They said it's a Subaru of America finance deal. So can you deal with this for me? And they said, this is absolutely not a Subaru of America finance deal. This is the dealership, and we're gonna sort it out, and we'll call you back. And then, like two hours later, I got a message from the dealership saying they were removing the extras.
Oh,
so you know that tells you that even a dealership that you've worked with, like through a lot,
yeah,
it's up to whoever it is you're talking to at the finance department, and they'll just try and screw you. But I think going through somewhere like a Subaru dealership, you then can like get Subaru to fix that stuff for you. Cause
yeah,
you know, especially being, I did the math. This is my 14th Subaru.
14th?
14th what? Subaru. Yeah.
But you're only 25, Paul. How many cars do you have?
My first Subaru was a 1982, DL wagon. So yeah, I've owned Subarus for as long as I could own cars. And I also at one point owned 4 Subarus at one time.
Okay, that makes a little more sense then.
Because
okay.
we would lift them up and weld the diffs and drive them on tracks and break them and just fix them by buying another one and replacing parts until the new one we bought is basically a shell. And then we would send that off to the wrecking yard and get another one.
You do the do you do the Subaru badge of ownership thing? You can get like how many Subarus you have.
No, I mean I would, but their numbers don't go high enough for me.
They don't, do they?
No, I was just looking that up. I think they have a 10 plus. So I guess I could do that, but like I'm also not into pieces of flair. That's not my style.
Oh yeah, so yeah, it's 10 plus is what it stops at.
Huh. Yeah. So you're not into flair, so you don't like put stickers all over your laptop?
Actually, no.
Really?
I have 0 stickers on my laptop right now. I used to have a Tire Fire laptop, a Tire Fire sticker, but otherwise, no.
Really?
But of course, I did buy a Subaru, so I do have a coexist sticker on it.
Okay, just checking. Yeah, we had to be sure.
Yeah, that comes with
that's
it.
Standard issue, right?
Standard issue. Okay, for sure.
Standard issue. Yeah, my experiences with car dealerships, not so much as mine wasn't so much the finance part as much as like really sleazy, and unfortunately, it was men who would look me up and down and look at me like a piece of meat, and I was like, nope, fucker, you're gonna get in trouble so bad right now because. Yeah, I was in a college town at the time, and like I had words with the manager who apologized profusely and they dealt with it, but it was just like, are you kidding me? You don't play this game. Absolutely not.
I'd like to just point something out if you did not hear. Yes, Laura did drop the F-bomb and she does not curse very often. So that
are you
was
I hear Laura swear all the time.
I did curse, just not typically where people can hear me. Unless go. I'm coding in the middle of the night, and then it's just like, fuck this shit. What the fuck?
That's good stuff.
Anyway, yeah. But speaking of like coding and weird experiences, I heard someone on this call has tried out Copilot.
Yeah, that's right. So GitHub Copilot, it is like a magic AI thing that like programs for you.
Ooh, sort of. Fancy.
So it's like autocomplete, but it's like super contextual. So it looks at what you're doing and it looks at what you've done and it'll finish functions for you. It'll finish comments for you. It'll like figure out.
Can it make me look like a better coder than I actually am?
Maybe. I'm still trying to figure that out. Because the thing is, it's trained on basically all the open source software on GitHub, right?
That could and be really bad.
Yeah, so, license be damned.
You're now as smart as the worst open source contributor. Because that's where it could be pulling code from.
That's
so there's some stuff. Like there are definitely some common patterns that it does really well. That is super useful, but there's also things it just does that is either completely wrong or just stupid. And I feel like there is interesting opportunities for malfeasance. you know, there's just simply someone's got a bug in their open source code and GitHub decides that that's a good piece of code for you and like injects a bug into your code that you don't know about, right? Now, if you have like a super common
line.
If you have a super common like Java struts vulnerability that every other project has, well, you're probably going to get it too if you're using Copilot. Right? And what would stop somebody from writing a bunch of like backdoors and malware and other things and open sourcing it and like almost doing like SEO on the GitHub AI algorithms to convince the GitHub AI to start injecting their weird vulnerabilities and things into your code. So there's interesting thoughts around that I've been having. And then there's also the whole, if it's reproducing open source code, then that code
has to
be appropriately copywritten. Right, it has to adhere to the copyright license. So if it's Apache 2 licensed or MIT licensed, it's not a big deal. It just needs to be attributed, right? Mm-hmm. If it's GPL 3, AGPL,
you
now, in theory, your entire code base is poisoned and you have to open source your entire code base.
Right.
To adhere to the license. But the thing is, you don't know what license that the code has come from. And like, I can look at someone else's open source code and then I can go and I can understand the concepts and I can reproduce those concepts and I'm not breaking open source, right? Because I'm not copying it. But that's because I, as a human, have like abstract thought, right? So I can understand the idea and the concept. Whereas AI doesn't have that. It can only sort of pretend it by having a huge backlog of if then else statements or, you know, whatever magic it uses.
Yeah.
So without actual abstract thought, it's not new ideas, and therefore it really is copying. And just because it's copying from lots of sources doesn't mean it's not copying from each of those sources,
mm-hmm.
which means every single thing that it's scraped to come up with this piece of code for you is now, in theory, their licenses are applicable to your code.
I feel like this is the kind of conversation you would have with like a new college student who doesn't know how to write papers, right? Mm. And they go off and they copy from this place, this place, this place, this place, like a line each or a phrase or something. And right. So for those of you who don't know, part of my job used to be editing science exams and math exams and things like that. But I would do some stuff for the college too. And like, you would see it and you'd be like, hey, listen, you can't do that. You can't just copy all this stuff and never give attribution. But then you'd have to explain to them because they'd be like, well, but I'm copying from all over. It's me putting the ideas together. Does it matter that it's not my words? And it's like, well, yes. Yes, it does. You know, you should have original thought here. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. Like it kind of feels like we're having that conversation right. in development now.
Yeah, it's that Silicon Valley tech bro thing where you don't learn the lessons from the people that came before you. And when you come across a new thing.
Yeah. And I mean, like, it's one thing, like, I guess I want to say to any beginners listening to this call, it's one thing if like you're sitting there and you're trying to understand a concept that someone's trying to teach you. Like, let's say you're trying to understand an architectural pattern. And so you reproduce what someone else does and you try it and you see how it works. Then you learn the concept, then you go take that and you apply it elsewhere.
Right.
This is different. So for anybody who's like not really a coder, doesn't really understand some of that, like there's a difference between understanding the architecture and understanding the pattern and understanding the language and the use case, and then kind of using it. And your code might look similar, but it's not exactly the same because you might do some things different. It's different from that versus like copying things whole cloth. And I mean, we all copy paste from Stack Overflow, let's be honest, but there's a difference there because hopefully you're not just copy pasting and not understanding what it's doing. You're right. understanding it and you're working through it. So
yeah. And also it's kind of an understanding with Stack Overflow that it's public yeah. domainish, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Like don't post proprietary stuff right. up Stack Overflow. Right. Please.
And like as someone answering a Stack Overflow, I think you have to actually say as part of like the user agreement that this is actually my code and I own it, which yeah. means if it's actually GPL and I copy from it and it's figured out, at least I can say, well, this person said it was their code and it was okay for me to use. I would still then need to remove it and clean it out, but I would have that as a backing. And so I feel like what we're going to see with Copilot is similar to what we already have with strange and interesting copyright licenses. So you think about the JSON license, right? And their famous do no evil clause, right? Which yep. is, neither I nor my customers will use this code to do harm unto others, or something along those lines, which everyone is like, most organizations will refuse to use it because they can't guarantee the use, especially by their customers.
Right.
And also like, what exactly does evil mean? Like there's no real defined evil. So how do you?
Yeah. It's a cultural question.
Right. And so this will be in the same thing. People will just be too scared to use it because of all of the potential issues.
So Paul got to play with the cool new shiny Big Bang toy called Copilot. I'm over here and I played with a competitor this week, actually.
Really?
I did. It's called Tab 9. I actually did a stream yesterday with Yotam. I can't pronounce his last name. I got to call him Yot. And we used Tab 9 to build out some software. And the interesting part about Tab 9 is that the actual algorithm they use is GPT-2, I believe, which does natural language processing on the repo that you are working on at the moment.
Yeah. So GPT-2 is, that's kind of that famous AI set of algorithms and stuff. I don't know the right words. From like, I feel like it was a year and a half ago that it was really good at, like, you would give it a couple of concepts and it would like be able to write an entire like story about it.
Yep. And it was actually pretty neat. We were able to like, it turns out the code base that I used to try to demo it in classic JJ form, they changed the repo since I had looked at it last. So I didn't know where anything was. But so that was a little fumbly for a little while. But there were some neat concepts that we showed, which was like we did a to-do string, like in a JavaScript application saying like to-do add color scheme or add colors. And then we created a constant with the word colors and then created an array. And then we started putting like colon red and then colon blue. And then it gave me like a list of five other colors already put in there. And I could just tab complete that. And then we did like, we'll add months in, as like a to-do in there. And then typed months and typed like February. And it did it up to like June to see if I wanted to do all the way to June or whatever. Like it programmatically tried to figure out what I was trying to get done. We took it one step farther and I actually opened up a Docker Compose file, right? And I was like, you know what? Let's throw in a new Docker, another stanza to put in a database. So that's just for shits and giggles, right? So I just started writing like database colon. And then because it's seen everything else inside the document, it was like, oh, you're trying to create a database. So you need to know the image and looks like you want to use Postgres. So it did like colon image Postgres from like upstream. Oh, you need these ports. Oh, you need these volume mounts. Like it did it all for me. And I was like, holy shit, this is amazing.
Yeah. So where is it getting that from?
So the initial learning or the models are really created off of, and Yot made very clear to make sure this was clear or made sure that it was very clear. The initial seeding of the model was done with Apache 2 licensed open source software. And then it does the model on your local code in your repo. And as you open up in different files and edit different files and make changes to those files, it continue works on the model on the background. And if you do the pro, it'll actually push things into like a private model. So you can have it specifically for what you're doing. So from now on, Paul, when you and I are going to be coding together, I've actually hooked it into both Vim and VS Code for me on my machine. So you can actually start seeing Tab 9 right. Starting to do stuff for you, which is pretty damn
cool. So if the initial models are Apache 2, how do you get the attribution so you can attribute it back to the original authors?
So it's only suggests stuff for your stuff. I think there was an example you were talking about recently, which was like you're trying to do keys, right? Like you're going to say AWS key and AWS secret key, and it gave you an output of all that data, right?
Right?
And stuff you need to do. It doesn't do that. What it does is it reads what you are trying to do and then takes what is there already done and gives you options of what it thinks that you want to do. And then you select which one you're looking for. It's a very specific turn, but it is just enough to say that it isn't taking previous known code because it's doing natural language processing on it.
But that's exactly what the GitHub is doing. Like GitHub Copilot is GPT-2 based as well. You're describing the exact same behaviors.
Hang on. Maybe I'm using the wrong terms. Give me two seconds here.
So here's the thing though. Like if it's done machine learning over a bunch of Apache 2 code, then
you have to know where it's from.
It needs to give you the attributions. Otherwise, you're in the exact same position as we're at with GitHub Copilot. Because it can't have, like it's machine learning. It doesn't have abstract ideas, right? So it can't understand an idea. It can simply run a statistical analysis over a bunch of pre-existing stuff to make a best guess. And it constructs that best guess from the amalgamation of all the stuff in its model.
Right. And even though it's not exactly the exact code, they're not like copy pasting the code itself.
Right.
It's still coming from these repos. So the license in the repo needs to have all of those things, and it needs to acknowledge that at the top of each file with all the information about that, like where it came from, kind of thing. So yeah, it's kind of awkward. I mean, like, I guess I keep thinking about even in, so I'm a JetBrains IDE person, and I can do like tab complete on some things.
Right.
But it's
tab nine,
it's
works
the,
with
it's
it.
The dumb version. It's the, I'm going to put this in air quotes that you can't see on a podcast. It's the quote unquote dumb version that says that, you know, oh, you're looking for this package. Oh, it's in this directory that you're looking for. It doesn't finish my code most of the time.
But when it does, that's okay, because it's coming from a set of purposefully templated code designed to be like effectively like commons, open commons. It's designed for you to be able to just use it.
See, I think, like, to me, the problem that I see with this kind of thing is that it's very easy to become reliant on these and forget the concepts and the ability to actually code it yourself. This is actually one of the things that I rail against when it comes to doing live demos. I hate it when people do tons of tab completes.
Mm-hmm.
You have to type it out. Like, so for me, I actually will keep a separate terminal that doesn't have all of my aliases, that doesn't have all of those things that I'm used to having. Because one of the things I learned when I was first learning, I had someone who was trying to explain to me what we were doing. And I still remember he was using LL to do an LS-LA in the thing. Really common alias. But my brain kept stopping whenever he did that because I couldn't follow how he did that.
Right.
And I had to keep stopping him. So I couldn't learn until I saw it. So whenever I see this kind of setup on a live screen, someone's doing something like that, I keep thinking, you need to type it out. You need to type out what you're doing. You need to type out all of the commands in long form. Mm-hmm. If you're teaching someone, it's one thing if you're doing it by yourself and you're just trying to go quickly, but even then, how much do you forget? Like, how much do you forget about that architectural pattern? How much do you forget about writing that code? Or how much don't you learn because you made a mistake and you realized it when you pushed it to dev and it broke?
Yeah.
You don't realize why that broke. You don't realize how that needs to get fixed. So that's my argument. It feels like the monkeys making Shakespeare trope.
1,000 monkeys at 1,000
monkeys at 1,000 typewriters eventually will write the entire works of Shakespeare. This is what it feels like to me. And no offense to people using it, no offense to people building it, but like, don't you want to learn it? Don't you want to figure it out and know that it broke and go, I fixed that. I figured it out. Like, you don't become a senior engineer until you break prod 5 times, right? Isn't that how it works? Yeah.
That's right.
Here's where I found it really useful. And that is in like what you were talking about with JetBrains, is the autocomplete parts of it. Like, I don't want it to write the code for me. I want it to replace the need for me to do boilerplate. When I'm writing Go and I declare something with an error state, I totally want it to like add if error nil blah, right? Because I'm going to do that after every single and it gets repetitive. Yeah. And when something's that repetitive and it's boilerplate, there's zero advantage in me typing it every time.
Yeah.
So I just want, I want to get rid of the boilerplate. And that's what I think Spring does really well, is they help eradicate the boilerplate. And when you watch someone like Josh Long, who's like the Spring advocate, when he's got his IDE wired up right, watching him code is like watching me code with Copilot turned on. So it is possible to be really good with your like IDE autocompletes and your like cleaning out the function types and stuff like that without necessarily needing to go to something that's like a full ML type thing. Mm-hmm. But then you need every single language to have IDE plugins and the people with the cares to actually build it all out. Whereas with something like GPT, with something like Copilot, or what was your thing, JJ?
Tab 9.
It's kind of doing that. It's like kind of automatically doing that for them, but at the expense of not being sure exactly where stuff's come from.
Right.
And so I think we'll end up with interesting, like, new licenses that are going to specifically target this, because it's going to be a gray area. And it's not until it's contested in court, which these things never end up getting contested in court. Like, when was the last time you saw an AGPL violation contested in court?
Google versus Oracle, or Oracle versus Google? I don't think that's AGPL.
That's not AGPL. That's a whole other thing.
That generation's 20-year war.
Wee.
Yeah. Aside from that, it doesn't happen, right?
Yeah. Most of the time, it just goes to settlement or something like that.
And so, until there's precedence, people are going to be like at a enterprise level too scared to use it. Mm-hmm. Like, imagine if it turns out that like someone was using Copilot at Tesla, and now all of Tesla's like auto driving software has to be open sourced.
Well, I'm more thinking about how many mistakes we all make in general on GitHub repos, and if I really want that on my car.
That too.
Like, but that's where my brain went.
Yeah.
Tesla has a Copilot already.
So I actually did an experiment where there was a blog post a couple of weeks ago. I won't go into detail about it, but the person had put in something that was like very, very incorrect, but also something that you kind of had to know pretty well to know that was incorrect. And so that they were kind of getting blasted on Twitter a little bit. And actually Ian Coldwater showed up and said, "This isn't cool. Like, this is an easy mistake to make. Plenty of other people have made this mistake. Like, y'all need to chill, right? This is somebody who's pretty new and is probably never, ever going to try writing anything ever again because you've all just like blasted them." I took what they were doing and I pasted it into Copilot, and Copilot finished it wrong.
Yeah.
So that was kind of proof to me that like Copilot doesn't care if something's right or wrong, if it's secure or not secure. It's just making a best guess at what people think in the open source communities.
Yeah. I mean, I keep thinking about the, it's not really like a study, but it's kind of a thought experiment of, you know, back in the 1890s, we had people working in factories, like everything was by hand. We had all kinds of things like that. And then the machines came and automated it. And then we had the, you know, what do these people do, and the fight back against having machines in the factories. And then the workforce then transitioned to new skills, moving on from those skills, things like that. I keep wondering if this is something similar where we're going to see like low-level coding go away over time because people are doing this. I hope not, because I feel like there's a lot of thought process that needs to go into all this. And especially since we're all wrong half the time. Or more. So like, I really don't know if I want that perpetuated in forever, but like, it makes me kind of wonder, how is the industry going to change because of things like this? Are we going to basically have to start saying to people, like, the bar is getting higher to join the ranks of developers, just like the bar is really high for people to join like teams that are doing DevOps world stuff or SRE, because you have to know infrastructure, you have to know development, you have to know all these things. Are we going to start seeing that for like writing a React-based web page? Are we going to start seeing that for there are WordPress developers?
Mm-hmm.
Quotes. Mm-hmm. Are we going to start seeing that because of stuff like this?
I mean, we might. I feel like we already see interesting stuff in the DevOps realm where, like, if everything you know about doing operations is writing Terraform, what are you going to do when the database blows up?
Yeah.
What are you going to do when like the you don't have enough disc IOPS to deal with the massive, like, once a day stored procedure running across your database?
Yeah. What are you going to do when your network falls over?
Yeah.
What are you going to do? Yeah. Like, there's so many things.
And there's there. Like, it's great that we are doing all this stuff in like Terraform and stuff like that, but we still need people that understand the core of like how things work and how things are architected. And maybe we need less of that. And maybe we can be pushing that down to commodity where that's like our cloud providers deal with most of that. But like, I don't care who you are, you're running stuff in Kubernetes. At some point, IOPS is going to be an issue that you're going to have to deal with, right?
Yeah.
Even though it's so far below, like, you're not saying anything about IOPS in a Kubernetes manifest. It's like four layers of abstraction below you. But at some point, you're going to have something that's running slow and you'll have two choices. One is like insert coin, get more compute. Or the other is like figure out what's slow and optimize around it.
Are you telling me we need to spin up another OpenStack cluster, Paul?
Shut up, JJ.
I have to wonder how many people still know the OSI model.
Right? That's a great question.
Oh my God, I don't even know the OSI model anymore.
I mean, I
knew it once.
I still know it. It's because like I relate all of the infrastructure I learned back down to the fundamental principles that I learned when I worked at a hosting provider. Like, that's how I learned how things were put together. Like, even like, if I'm looking at my Arduino, because I play with Arduino and I kind of put it together and I do different things with it, I'm still thinking in terms of how does this get put together? What is the OSI model? How is the data flowing through all of this stuff? So like I know JJ's giving me a look, but when I start thinking about it, like, are newer people not learning that? Are they just learning the abstraction layer way up here and they don't understand how it goes all together? If so, like, how quickly are we going to fall apart?
Well, so I wonder if, I'm sure you're still being taught the OSI model at school, right?
Well, I didn't go to school for it. I have no idea.
Sure. But like for people that are going to school, I'm sure that's still a thing. Someone who's been to school in the last 20 years could probably tell us if that's the case. But there's a gap, there's learning stuff at college and then coming out to the real world and going straight to the super advanced stuff and kind of missing I feel like everyone goes straight from like out of college into being like senior developer.
Yeah.
Right. It's that journey to senior developer where you're supposed to figure out how everything you learned at college or wherever you learned to do this from, like, actually applies to the real world.
Yeah.
And I feel like we're kind of skipping that. And like, that's
how often do they get to break it?
Right.
Yeah.
That's how I learned everything. I broke everything constantly. Mm-hmm. Not a good thing when you're responsible for
problems. I jokingly said I couldn't tell you the OSI model and I couldn't go layer one is blah, layer two is blah, and recite through them. But I know, like, oh, this is a routing problem. Okay, that's
layer
three. This is there's a problem with like the HTTP protocols. That's layer seven. Like, I can at least still kind of figure out
it's knowing more how it flows.
Yes, layer eight is money and layer nine is politics.
That's right.
And layer zero is people.
Yeah.
So, you know, but like, it's, I don't know. I guess I just keep thinking about like, if you don't know how it's put together, like, this kind of is the way that the cars went, right?
Mm-hmm.
People stopped learning how cars are put together. They stopped learning things. I mean, I'm not like a major gearhead. It might sound like I am, but I'm learning a ton. Like, last night we were watching YouTube videos on the difference between a supercharger and a turbocharger, because I don't know. But it's like, if you don't know how to change the oil on your car, if you don't know how to change your tire, I remember growing up and I was taught those things. I was taught how to do all of those things. You might not do it, but you know it. So, you know, when you're stuck on the side of the road, you know, okay, here's the thing that's broken. All right. I at least know whether it's safe for me to drive to the next exit and get off and go find a service bay, or stay right where I am and call a tow truck. Like, or if you're really good at it, you can fix it on the side of the road. But like, I know enough to do that. If you don't know that, you're going to like call somebody to change your tire, but not because you can't change it, because like you physically can't get the lug nuts off or something right. like that. That's different. Instead, you're sitting there because you don't know, or like you don't. I know somebody who they've never changed the oil in their car. Like they never knew that they had to take it to somewhere to get the oil changed.
Mm-hmm.
They drove the car for like 50,000 miles that way or some crazy amount. And I was just like, and they're like, yeah, my car broke. I don't know why. I'm like, maybe change the oil.
The other week, somebody on Nextdoor was asking, said that their hot water was out, and if everyone else was out, if it was just them. I was like,
oh dear.
Go into your garage and there's a little closet. Open up that closet. There's a big round thing. That's what makes your hot water
working.
It's not like electricity. It's not coming in from a.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
not all in one big hotel.
And like, that's like
reboot it. You'll be fine.
Nothing on the person, right? If
no, it's not.
If no one ever taught them that your house makes its own hot water, how would you know? It's a fair enough assumption that you get your hot water the same way you get your cold water from the tap.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, it's fair. It's just.
But it's like a good example of like where. We're abstracting stuff away, but we're not necessarily teaching what that abstraction is. Like, you don't need to know how to fix the hot water system, but it's probably a good idea to know that there is one.
There's
and I think that goes so through all of it. Like, there's,
I mean, so I guess it's the same thing with Copilot, like wrapping back up towards where we were, like, how long is it going to be before someone doesn't know what a function is because they only know that they just hit tab?
I still don't know what a function is.
Yeah, me neither.
Actually, no, I know what a function is. It's classes I can't figure out.
Oh, well, you know, it's turtles all the way down.
Yeah, it is turtles all the way down.
All has no class.
oh, man. Well, so let's kind of, I know we've
maybe,
been
maybe
a lot
later
of
on
tech
you can give me a few
track.
Pointers.
Hey, nice. if I lose the memory, there's too much garbage in my memory. That was a bit too much of a stretch. Yeah.
I mean, that's classic.
But it's
JJ
okay.
Right
there.
Yeah.
It's okay.
Oh, I do want to bring something up before we start getting close to the end here. I forgot to put this in our notes, so I'm going to just bring it up. I know, right? I recently rediscovered something that I made a mistake on rediscovering. So I'm a gray beard, right? Like everybody knows this. But there was a game I used to play called Scorched Earth. It was a little tank game. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
That was Worms before Worms was a thing.
Exactly. I found it. It's you can play it online.
Wait, what? And,
yeah. Legit.
Yes.
I'll put a link into the show notes here, and I actually have it up and it works just fine. It's basically somebody is doing DOSBox inside of a browser, so it works perfectly fine. Where's the hell is this thing?
Can we multiplayer it?
So sort of. Ooh. So if you check this out, here it is. It's right here.
Oh yeah, that's what I remember.
Yep. Nice.
And you've got the whole. Boom. Right? It's got the horrible sound and everything. It's great stuff. So, and I can't seem to get my mouse back. But I will put it in the show notes and you can put up to the 10 players. You got the nukes, you got the whole system. So I was super excited when I just accidentally, because I was trying to find it, right? Like every once in a while, you're like, what was that game that I used to play for hours and hours and hours?
Oh,
right here.
So the one that we actually used to play, and I'm probably dating myself. Was the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy text-based adventure game.
That was so hard.
Oh, but there was no save point. And like, you just had to keep going. Don't turn the computer off. I still remember, I think we accidentally plugged the computer at one point into the light switch outlet version. Like we didn't even realize we did it. I think we had it had gotten unplugged and got moved and then got moved back and it got replugged in. And I remember our mom coming, all right, time to go. And the light switch went off and we're like, no! We had gotten so far on that game. Oh, the babblefish.
Mm-hmm. Trying to get that touching out of the machine. Yeah.
Oh, that one we kept going down the stupid ass drain. I was just like, ah, oh. And then we realized about the towel. Never forget your towel.
You can play that online too.
I know. I found that in Zork.
Yeah.
I found both of them. So anyway, good times. I'm going to be like playing video games for the next 2 weeks, I bet. Let's see.
But why? What's that?
Anyway,
the next 2 weeks?
Something very special.
Ooh, okay.
Okay. Nice. Watch on Twitter. Maybe you'll find out.
I only use Mastodon now because okay, I only believe in GNU software.
You better be careful about the licenses then.
I think
you're
going to
be
true.
Doing that on a live stream. Yeah.
And you got me on that one, actually.
I did. So I guess we can finish out talking about food. I think that's what everybody really tunes into this about.
Yeah.
I made pork fried rice last night.
Ooh.
Good stuff.
Now tell me about your rice.
So the rice has been cooked and in the freezer for like 2 weeks.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Did you cook it?
Oh yeah. So cooked up and the rice.
Did you cook it in a rice cooker?
No, cooked it on the stove for like 20 or 30 minutes.
Like the absorption method?
Yep. Well, okay. No, like, I mean, it's boiling the whole time. So
and then you
I
grain
guess
it's
technically absorption. And then yeah. Like it's like long grain rice.
Yeah. Yeah. But so when you boil it, do you boil it until there's no water left or do you drain it?
Boil it till I kind of do it until the rice is the right consistency. So sometimes there's a little bit of water left. It kind of depends.
Yeah. So that is the absorption method.
Yeah.
So okay. the idea there is basically when it's ready, there's no more water left.
Yeah. I feel it. I mostly kind of feel it because like I'm one of those pasta people that I cook till the pasta is al dente, till the number on the box or not until like whatever, because otherwise it just tastes awful.
So I assume you don't have a rice cooker.
Well, I did just get an Instant Pot. So I've never used it for rice yet.
So let's talk about how you can optimize your rice for fried rice using the Instant Pot.
Well, but the thing is that the rice has to get cooked. So I cook it for something else. And then the leftovers get then frozen so that it comes out, gets defrosted, but it has to be dry if you want to do a really good fried rice.
Yes.
So, but no, I've never actually done it in an Instant Pot. Why? Is there some like special thing that makes it drier so I can use fresh rice?
Well, so there's a very specific, you can totally use fresh white rice. It just has to be pretty dry. So there's a very specific way I cook rice in the Instant Pot, which gives me what I need for regular rice, but also for doing fried rice right away. And that is I rinse the rice pretty well. So until the water is mostly clear, right? That's pretty standard. Mm-hmm. You do that probably even when you're boiling it, right?
Nope. No, I don't. I'm one of those people that wants that starchy. So.
But then your grains stick together, especially for fried rice.
Kind of. If you freeze it, it doesn't stick.
Yeah. So bear with me. So
wash
it until most of the starch is gone and then let it just sit in water for like 10 to 30 minutes and then drain all of that out. So it's basically, it's still moist, but it's not wet.
Okay.
Then stick that in the Instant Pot and then add the same amount of water by weight.
Okay.
And then put the Instant Pot on high for 2 minutes and then let it naturally start cooling for 10. And when it hits 10, just release the thing and let it just cool down quick. And you'll get basically a pretty dry but fully cooked rice that you can absolutely use for fried rice right away. The other way you can do it is you actually steam the rice. So you put the rice in like a steam basket and you can do that same one-to-one combination, cover it and put it in the steamer and close it. And that will basically give you the similar result as to the Instant Pot. You can also have it open in the steamer, but then you usually boil it for a couple of minutes first and then switch it to being open in the steamer. And those three ways, you get rice that you can use for fried rice right away.
Huh.
But they also, you also get it so that the grains are super individual, which is really good for fried rice. It's kind of what you want, but also for other stuff.
Hmm.
When you do it in the Instapot, usually the bottom inch is like a little bit compressed and not great for fried rice, but the majority of the rice is perfect. And as soon as you take the lid off, you get a bit of a fluff.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Because, you know, as JJ would tell you, it's always important to fluff your rice.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Absolutely. Very important. But fried rice is good.
Fried rice is
thank
amazing.
You. I will have to try that in the Instant Pot. But yeah, I freeze my rice so that like we can do it for a really quick weeknight meal. Because
mm-hmm.
I take it out, defrost the rice, toss it in. Well, either I defrost the rice or last night I did the stupid thing of putting it in the wok frozen in big chunks. And that wasn't really the best in the world.
Too much water.
Well, it wasn't too bad, but it was just more like it just took forever to warm up without burning it. I need to do that better next time.
What was your pork? How did you do your pork?
So we had a bone-in pork chop that we cut off the bone. I know. Normally we grill it, just do a grilling, and then we cube it. We typically do a ton of grilling on the weekends and then cube all of it up and keep it in the freezer. And then I just pull out what we need for a meal. But in this case, we didn't have them cooked because of reasons. So we cut it off the bone, cut it into small pieces. And here's where I messed up. The ideal thing to do with this kind of pork is to actually marinate it a little bit. So you put it in with rice wine. I think it's rice wine vinegar, not rice wine, and cornstarch. And you kind of toss it all up together in that to get like a little bit of a crispy outside. And then once it's marinated for like 20 to 30 minutes in that, then you take that and then fry that in oil in your wok and you keep stir frying it and you get nice crispy outside. Take that out of the wok and then put the rice in, rendering in the fat from the pork. You render all that inside of the pork along with soy sauce, sesame oil. I use toasted sesame oil because I like the taste a little better. Even though that's a finisher, it tastes really good in fried rice for some reason. And then you can do onion and garlic and all that. I typically do powder because we're always in a hurry at this point. Salt and pepper. And you then take that, get that all warmed up. Then you shove that all off to the side. You know, get it a little bit brown, not too bad. But it'll get brown when you add the soy sauce to it. Shove that off to the side, crack in a bunch of eggs. So I do 5 cups of rice to 2 eggs. Last night I did 5 cups of rice or more to 3 eggs. It was pretty good. Scramble that inside, scramble it all together. Then I put in frozen veggies, let that warm up, and then toss the pork back in on top. But last night I skipped the marinade on the pork and I regretted it because you miss out. But anyway, that's the short version of like a nice gigantic thing of pork fried rice, and it freezes pretty well as well. So good stuff. We're going to be having
I'm a big fan of fried rice. I probably make it once a week or so. Usually with whatever I have left over from barbecue or, you know, whatever else.
Yeah.
It's kind of my way of using up leftover protein.
Yeah. That's a kitchen sink one. I'll do it with lo mein as well. So I'll do a lo mein with that. Lo mein noodles, pretty easy to find in the store and you can cook them real nice. They taste amazing.
Yeah, do you have a wok that you've carefully seasoned? And all that?
I'm really bad. I have a wok. It is not carefully seasoned. It's nonstick and I'm horrendous. I know.
It's fine.
But I am a get it done cook sometimes in the week. So it's more of I really don't want to be dealing with our metal pan that burns. I cannot keep it not from burning. I have not figured it out. The only time I can not burn it is butter. Butter won't burn on it.
I don't have a problem with using nonstick. They're so useful. I mean, if you want to be an asshole about it, you can like talk about very specific temperatures and all that sort of stuff to get your stainless steel to not stick, but also I just use your nonstick.
I don't have that kind of time.
Whatever.
we have I've got nonstick stuff. Like that's what I grew up on. And then the boy has Calphalon metal pans. And so we kept them because they were a lot nicer than my like Walmart dollar store nonstick pans that I was using in college, except for this wok, which I kept because it's still great. But now every time I use that pan, I hate using it because, like, even scrambled eggs, I cannot manage to not end up with a layer of something baked onto the bottom of it.
Oh yeah, it is hard to do, especially eggs crazy. On a stainless steel pan. Like, don't even bother trying. But well, like the main thing I have the nonstick pan for is eggs.
Yes. So for me, actually, I found that if I use butter, for some reason, nothing sticks. I haven't figured it out. But if I do the pan with butter instead of oil, instead of Pam, instead of whatever, like the cooking spray pan.
So I wonder if that's because the butter is effectively regulating your temperature, because the butter has a fairly high water content. So until the butter's frothed off, it's keeping the pan at like basically a boiling temperature, water boiling temperature. As soon as that's frothed off, I bet you that's when you're putting food in, and that's when it's approaching the ideal like non-stickiness kind of temperature. But then if you go too long, you get burnt butter.
Yeah.
And so it's too high. I mean, so it's kind of forcing you to not go too high so you don't get burnt butter, but it's also getting you from being too low by giving you that time to know when to put it in, which is like right after it's finished frothing.
See, I didn't really think of that scientific version. For me, it was just that I grew up using butter as a thing. You're
the scientist of our group. You should
I know, but like chemistry is not my thing. Chemistry is not my thing. I guess this is technically physics, but okay. But yeah, so I grew up using butter versus oils and cooking spray and stuff. So I kind of blamed it on, I just know what I'm looking for and having experience with it. But hey, you know, anyway.
You know the water trick to test if a pan's ready?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah.
Flick the water on it, wait till it steals.
Yeah, but you want it to go in, form like one big ball and whiz around the thing. If it splatters into lots of little balls, then it's too hot. No, it's too hot.
It skitters away. It runs away. It's too hot.
Yeah. No, you want it to kind of skitter away, but you don't want it to skitter away in like a thousand little pieces.
So I'll do it with oil. I'll flick some water into the oil just to see, is it ready yet? But I've been getting better about doing the hand method, where you just kind of hover your hand high enough off and you see how close you can get.
Yeah.
I've calibrated my hand. I have a calibrated hand.
Nice.
Yeah. Anyway.
You just wet your hand and you go.
Exactly.
And if your hand sticks, it's too hot.
Oh no.
Please don't do that, people listening at home. We are not responsible for whatever you do to burn yourself listening to our suggestions.
Yeah, I guess if people are stupid enough to think that we're entertainment, they're probably stupid enough to put their hand on a hot pan.
Well, anyway,
and on that note,
another episode.
Everyone make some fried rice. Tell Laura how it went.
Delicious. Yes, please tell me how it went. And subscribe. I guess we're supposed to like do this whole thing where we talk about
like and subscribe.
And like and subscribe.
I don't know, what is this? Is this YouTube?
Stop.
Quick, turn off the recording.
Yeah, right.
Don't forget to sign up for our Patreon.
All right, everybody say bye.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.